Monster Man, bonus episode, May 2022.
Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games.
Today's episode is a bonus episode, going out to my patrons at all levels. If you're new here, this is just a little kind of, a behind-the-scenes update. In this episode, I talk about whatever's on my mind at the moment, whatever I'm thinking about. They're a little discursive. I edit them a little less heavily than the other ones. They're just like a fun little thing for patrons. Anyway. So what have I been up to? It's been a pretty busy month for me. You know, at the beginning of May, I came back from the United States, as I mentioned, and pretty quickly after that, I was away for a long weekend. I went down to London to see a taping of another podcast with my wife, Allison, and it was my first time staying in London since, you know, probably the beginning of 2020. That was nice. Had a good time. We went directly from there to a LARP event. And then the weekend after that, I was at Partisan in Newark, which is a war game show. So although because I was working, I didn't actually have very much time to see much of the show. I've probably seen more of some of the games, you know, watching people's videos and looking at sort of blog posts and social media posts than I did when I was actually there, which is always the downside of these things. You know, on the one hand, your ticket's free, but on the other hand, it's because you don't really get to do any of the stuff you paid for. So I had that LARP thing. I play in a live-action role-playing game called No Rest for the Wicked. I took a break from LARPing for a while, and I've got more into kind of like action-oriented stuff. So, where you actually hit people, which I never really did when I was younger. I always sort of thought the sort of outdoorsiness of it would be off-putting to me, and that it was more like combat-focused and was maybe not interested in the kind of things I was interested in. But I found that not really to be the case, at least in the games that I've played in or like volunteer crewed for. I'm interested in getting more into it as long as it doesn't involve so much travel. This game I'm playing is quite a long way away, but I enjoy it so much that it's worth it to me. That means I've been doing some props and costume stuff this month in preparation for another game at the beginning of July. And of course, that's a whole other rabbit hole that you can go down. I have immense respect for people that do cosplay and that kind of thing because of the amount of like real careful precision craftsmanship and creativity, both in terms of like what things look like, but also kind of improvising to turn designs from like art into things that a human being can actually wear on their body. So this month I didn't get as much reading done as I did the previous month. That is, of course, largely because I didn't have the same kind of, I guess I did have some train journeys, but you know, there's nothing like long time in an airport and long flights to really let you catch up when you're reading. So this month, not as good. I did read a couple of things. I read a Jack Vance novel, Amphirio. You know, I'm a big Jack Vance fan, but I've never really read all that much of his science fiction. In fact, this may be the first. I mean, like if you want to quibble, I guess you could say that The Dying Earth is, I mean, it's set in a futuristic setting, but it's a fantasy story, right? Read The Dying Earth books. I've read some other bits and pieces, but I'm pretty sure this is the first Jack Vance science fiction novel I've read. It was interesting, you know, it had that kind of Vancean quality. You know, the dialogue's not very naturalistic. Things are kind of like stilted and witty and ornate, but in a kind of stuffy and formal way. It worked, I thought, in terms of sort of the themes of the novel, you know, about kind of customs and the traditions of a culture and sort of why people remain within them, and there was more to it than that, but I thought it was good. I find Jack Vance to be he's a bit of a strong beverage. Like I have another from the same purchase, Jack Vance novel, on my to-read stack, but it's probably going to be a little while before I get around to it, if only because I don't always enjoy reading too much of it at once. This, I think, is something that is overlooked in the way people think about games, although you can see, you know, the way that like story game type games tend to be quite like focused on particular themes and particular experiences, but then also there's very seldom the expectation that you play them for a long time. And I think that that's, you know, a feature in terms of, you know, I like to play a game where we're all sailors dying of scurvy or whatever. I mean, I don't, but I wouldn't mind it. But I would certainly not like to play sailors dying of scurvy week in, week out. And by contrast, you have these other games that are intended for kind of long-running play that tend to take a more loosey-goosey approach to genre. One of the things that you see a lot on kind of the gaming internet is people who are really mad at a particular genre of game that you know that they used to be quite strongly into. And I try to avoid having that approach, which is to say, like, there are things that I'm not that interested in playing anymore, and it's in many cases just because I'm a bit burnt out on them. There may come a time in 5 years or 10 years that I'm like, yeah, you know what I want to play is like World of Darkness games. But for now, I've had my fill of them. You know, I played them pretty continuously for, I was going to say well over a decade, but it's well over a decade. It's over 2 decades. And I don't know what else I have to say in that genre. But, you know, maybe there will be something, right? So there are certainly people, you know, that one sees on social media who are like diehard 5e haters or whatever. And you're like, I know that you used to be a 5e guy. There was something about that that appealed to you. And maybe you've got like the zeal of the convert, but also maybe you should just relax. That was roundabout. I also, I went into town with Allison last weekend, kind of the first time that I, you know, we went to a market and we just like did some shopping and we took the dog with us. And it was lovely. And I know that doesn't sound like much, but actually that hasn't happened in quite a long time because we were away and then we were traveling and it was a whole thing. Anyway, while I was out and about, you know, I found at my local secondhand bookstore a copy of Alex DeCampi and Erica Henderson's graphic novel, Dracula Motherfucker. Now, I want to make it clear that I'm not bleeping out the fact that I said a bad word. The title of the book is Dracula Motherfucker. It's not the thing that you think I'm bleeping out. I don't want to say that I didn't enjoy the story aspect of it, but certainly for me, the main appeal of the book was Henderson's art. Because I think that Erica Henderson, like, for most people, think of her as an artist who is quite kind of cartoony and whose work is, you know, sort of whimsical. And this is very much not that. The coloring, I think, was amazing, which is done by Henderson herself, I believe. Do love a bold, unrealistic set of color schemes. I purchased, but have not yet had a chance to read, the new Stargrave book, The Last Prospector. I like Stargrave a lot. I played a sort of Stargrave campaign with a friend of mine who has since moved away. And now I don't really have a regular opponent. So I'm, you know, if you live in the Cambridge area and you think that playing Stargrave might be fun, you should get in touch. I went to the cinema, which for only the second time since, you know, COVID, and that was to see Everything Everywhere All at Once, new film with, well, I guess not that new, but you know what I mean, with Michelle Yeoh in it and also James Hong, and you should check it out. It's good. I recommend it. It's, well, I mean, I conditionally recommend it. It's interesting to see, you know, I think that one thing that we are seeing is this kind of like maybe a generation of filmmakers who have less regard for kind of traditional distinctions between genres, maybe. Or maybe this is something that always kind of existed in cinematic traditions outside the Hollywood mainstream. But it's interesting. It's kind of a weird, it's a science fiction action comedy family drama, I guess. I remember thinking it to myself as I watched it and saying to Allison as we came out of the cinema, this movie rules. Shout out to War Rocket Ajax. The experience of going to the cinema is interesting just because, you know, we went in the afternoon on a weekday, which means that there were really only like 4 or 5 other people in there with us. We'd gone to see it the previous night, but it had been sold out, you know, like a kind of like a weird indie film sold out at 8:45 on a Monday evening, which I was really surprised by. I mean, I guess it's half term, but I wouldn't have thought that Everything Everywhere All at Once would be like this summer's big teen hit. Although, I mean, it could be. Anyway, it's good. I also saw after, you know, it came out years ago. I know I'm late to the party on this one. But Jojo Rabbit, the Taika Waititi film about, well, again, another thing that's kind of hard to describe in terms of its genre. Anything I say about it being like a comedy about a kid who has Adolf Hitler for an imaginary friend, that would sound not weirder than it is, but certainly more tasteless than it is. I mean, it's a little tasteless. It's pretty tasteless. But, you know, I think that there's a type of tastelessness that exists to provoke but nothing else. And there's a type of tastelessness that has a kind of sincerity at its heart. And to me, at least, that second kind is more enjoyable. You know, the thing is tasteless, but there are a lot of things where the only thing about it is tastelessness, if that makes sense. Anyway, so enjoyed that. I don't know what else I've been watching. Oh, how could I forget? I watched Wu-Tang, An American Saga, which has come onto Disney Plus. Now, I apologize to the majority of my listeners who don't share my fascination with the cultural institution that is the Wu-Tang Clan. I think, you know, when Wu-Tang started to get really popular, because obviously this is set like right when they're just coming out, but I mean at the beginning of their fame, you know, when suburban kids in California were starting to hear about them, which for me would have been, I guess, the summer of 1995. I think that's right. Summer of 95, which, you know, could be a good length of time after everybody else had heard about them. Like, you know, I was not like keeping up with developments in hip hop at that time. But when I first found out about them was like maybe the exact right age to be fascinated by the Wu-Tang Clan, right? Like I was 16 and they do this thing where it's a sort of blend of like a kind of personal storytelling and hip hop conventions. Well, I say conventions, of course, in some ways, a lot of those were being innovated by the Wu-Tang Clan at that time, and pop culture references, but then also like geek culture references, you know, that love of kung fu movies and comic books and whatever. And I think for me, you know, one of the things that I love about gaming, one of the things that I love about early Warhammer 40,000 in particular, but also you can see this in other types of RPGs and war games, is this bricolage that is just about the kind of elements of disposable pop culture that were, you know, one of the things, like, I'm not saying that the show is amazing. It's interesting. I don't know that it's like outstanding. And I don't know that if you're not a fan, you would get that much out of it, really. But one of the things that I think that it does very well, and obviously its portrayal of the Wu-Tang characters is kind of, is largely heroic because, you know, they are involved in the making of it. Master Killer appears in one scene at the end of season one. I've only seen season one, but there are three seasons of it. But of course, Master Killer would not actually member the Wu-Tang Clan until after Protection Act came out. Everybody knows that. But the portrayal of RZA as fundamentally a nerd within a cultural context that doesn't make him readable as what the stereotype of a nerd should be, but someone who is kind of introspective and fixates on things and can't just like, you know, get high with his friends and watch a kung fu movie and have a good time, but has to like collect it, has to know more about it, has to like learn the details of it. And similarly, someone who loves technology, like if you have ever listened to RZA talk about like the early days of his work, it's very much about the technology of the time and about how he engaged with and adapted that stuff. Anyway, my point is RZA's a geek. And not that that's surprising, but I think that that thread of those kind of attitudes connects what is appealing to me about the Wu-Tang Clan. And I haven't kept up with their stuff. I mean, I know that they released later albums, which people like, but not as much. And, you know, they spent a lot of their last 20 years suing each other and whatever. I mean, that's on brand for geeks too, right? But I think that that kind of like weird mosaic of both like culturally general influences and personally specific influences makes things appealing. And you know, it makes the Wu-Tang Clan feel like, makes their stuff, their kind of mythology feel rich and textured and not like a pop culture rap that's a cash in, right? It's just not like, oh, let's make a song about this recognizable pop cultural icon. Like when Ghostface Killah is running around identifying himself with Iron Man in the mid-90s, that is a time when nobody gave a crap about Iron Man. Anyway, I guess I'm doing just that and like fixating on a thing's unique appeal to me. But I do think that in some ways, the things that appeal to me about comic books and the things that appeal to me about like early 40K, in some ways are some of the same things that appeal to me about the Wu-Tang Clan. Less 5%er stuff in 40K, but you know. Right, what else? So, reading, viewing, playing. My games continue as normal. Scheduling has, you know, finally kind of returned to regularity. I'm playing some OSE with my friends this weekend. That's nice. I don't know if that'll turn into an ongoing thing or whether it'll just be a one-off, but hopefully we'll have a good time. I'm going to start my proposed Rogue Trader campaign that I mentioned in my last thing. I have to be strong about this because the thing about scheduling war games with adults is that it's very hard. Right? Because not only do you need like a fair amount of time and someone's got to host and the place has got to have the setup and this is, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes into it. And as a result, you know, we don't get to play as much as we would like because people are busy and they have jobs and they have kids and they have responsibilities. But so what I'm going to do is I'm going to schedule purely for my own convenience, have a large potential pool of players, and then just play with whoever happens to turn up. Kind of a West Marches approach, but for wargaming. We'll see how it goes. But I have to not start trying to get the schedule to where people like it. We're going to say, here is the date. You're all invited. If you can't come, that's cool. I understand. You're still invited. But this is the date we're playing on. Working, I finished my section for the Deluge zine. So that's gone off to the publisher and I got paid for it, which is the point where I can put a check mark on it, right? Like, it's never completely done until that happens. I'm going into edits for my bestiary stuff. So that we'll be making an announcement about that in late June. So stand by for that. Promoted Viking in the Sun, which is obviously now out. And people seem to respond positively to it, I felt, at Partizan. Although maybe one of the things that really pleased me was that Crusader States, which I don't get any money for because I did like a couple of photographs for it and did some of the playtesting. But, you know, I didn't write any of the book. Crusader States is continuing to sell well. You know, we sold out of the copies of Crusader States that we brought to the event, so that's cool, even if I don't get any royalties on it. And promoted the upcoming book Last Samurai Rebellion, which is a supplement for the miniatures game The Men Who Would Be Kings, written by Eric Wood together with Daniel Mersey. Yeah, that's gonna be coming out this summer. We'll announce Viking Adventures and that'll come out later in the year. That's gonna be like September, October time, I think, but don't quote me. I'm about to finish the final set of edits on the Magonian Mind Murders, so I'm just going through and looking for things like, does the edge of the image box clip over the text, or like, do all the page references go to the page that they say they're supposed to go to, etc., etc. Once that's done and off to the printers, fulfilling is going to be a pain, although actually not as much as the Pamphlet of Pantheons. I've done it before at this point. I feel like I've got a better system for ordering. And the total number of print orders is a lot smaller. I would be getting socked by high paper prices, but I think we're okay. You know, obviously they'll be higher than I hoped for, and the shipping price has gone up, but not by that much for the shipping. Like, I think, and I'm charging customers for shipping directly, so that shouldn't sting me, although obviously not great that it hurts people who are ordering the thing. So shipping is going to be time consuming and I'm not looking forward to it, but if it's going to happen, it should definitely happen in June because I got summer teaching in July, and so it'd be an extra hassle. After that, I'll be on to finishing up. I'm hoping to finish my submission for Viking Adventures in June. I have a meeting about it on the 15th, and I'd love to be finished by then. We'll see. And then after that, it's Mission of Mercy. Oh, and the June OSR Jam is happening, and I'm going to do a little bestiary project that I've been doing the sort of the images for over the last couple of days. So stand by for more information about that one. I'll definitely talk about it on Monster Man. So it's a lot, and some of it is late, and I feel bad about that. Although, you know, that is why I have introduced a new principle, which is that I'm currently finishing two projects before starting one. So once Magonian Mind Murders is down, that'll be two projects down, right? There'll be Magonian Mind Murders down and also Deluge, or maybe Bestiary will be finished first, who knows? But, you know, either way, two projects down, one new one can start. And until at least the end of July, I think that's going to be the position that I take. Similarly, you can hear that my voice is a bit rough. Tutoring has been very busy because here in the UK, students are just beginning their exams. The final exams that will, for younger students, determine what the last 2 years of their schooling will look like. And for older students, will determine whether they can get into the universities that they've applied to. So it's very stressful for them, and it's very busy for me. So a lot of talking, and my voice is suffering a little bit. But, I mean, it's a busy time of the year, but I knew it was going to be. And it wasn't last year, so it's nice that it is this year. But yeah, so that's what I've been up to. June OSR Jam entry coming soon. Watch this space. If you like the kinds of things I like, then I think you will like Everything Everywhere All at Once. You should go see it, or it'll presumably come on some kind of streaming service at some point. If you don't feel like going to the cinema to see it, which is fair enough. And yeah, I feel sure that there's something else that I should be talking about that I've got coming up, but I honestly don't know. Ooh, one thing I've been thinking about doing is I have a couple of friends of the show shout-outs that I want to make in an upcoming episode. But then I realized, you know, I feel kind of bad. Not that I feel kind of bad promoting these people's stuff, but I do feel kind of bad promoting their stuff and not other people's, because I know a lot of the people who listen to the show and a lot of the people who are patrons are game makers, game designers, artists, writers, other podcasters, etc. So I wanted to do at some point a patron promo special in which we talk about the other things that the patrons of the show make and people could tell me about. It would be a cool place for people to kind of share the things that they're working on. Maybe on the Patreon site, maybe in an episode. I don't know. But that's the thought that I'm having right now. Which is to say, I didn't forget about your thing, Damien. So yeah, so that's what I have been up to. Let me know what you think about the patron showcase. So yeah, that's what I've been up to in May. And hopefully I'll have some more good news for you about other Monster Man products in June. Until then, I'll see you in the next episode of Monster Man. A show about monsters. Because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.
If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.